State Rep. Julie Alexander set to go at her again today.
Good morning, Greg.
How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Good. So a lot of meetings with one-on-one with your constituents.
Yes, I'm not at this current time hosting open general office hours.
But if somebody calls you, they
absolutely.
Can...
But those that have been reaching out to me, I'm meeting with someone here after I leave here at Jackson Coffee Company, and I value the information, the stories you have. The majority of people are still reaching out to me via email with unemployment insurance issues and claims, and we continue to help them navigate that. That again takes the majority of my time. But in addition, always look forward to the conversations one on one with individuals in the community. So if that's something you'd like to do as we wait until we get back to our normal monthly office hours, feel free to reach out to my office.
How soon do you think that will be?
Oh, in the near future. Okay. Yeah, in the near future.
So you have a snowmobile story.
I do. So what you'll hear me say, Greg, is my good legislation comes from those I serve. And about 2 years ago...
I think I've heard you say that.
I say that a lot because it's simply the truth. About 2 years ago, an individual reached out to me, and they live in the Jackson County area, and they took their snowmobile up north. And as they were snowmobiling, over the course of years, they kept finding that snowmobile permit, that sticker kept peeling off. So they put it back on. They'd buy another one. They'd put it back on. They'd buy another one. They put it back on. This happened repeatedly. So finally, this individual took that snowmobile sticker and placed it in the back of the snowmobile, and then it stayed secured, and they were fine. They were fine until they were cited for improper placement of the decal on that snowmobile, because in statute it says it needs to be placed in a certain area. Mm-hmm. This is such an old law that I think because snowmobiles are made different, there isn't the material is different made that we're making snowmobiles from, and not only the material different, but there's less area for them to secure those stickers onto. So when this individual received this ticket, that meant he was cited with a misdemeanor up to 90 days in jail and or up to a fine of $500. Now, that in itself is bad enough, but he works for a large employer in Jackson County. And as part of his job responsibilities, he has to go into the prisons and do work. And in doing so, you cannot have a misdemeanor on your record to go into the prisons and work. Mm-hmm. So this would ultimately could have caused him to lose his job. So he spent a lot of his own personal money, I think it was like up to $3,000 in attorney fees, and continued to drive up there to try to negotiate with those in charge in this up north county and to explain the situation that he truly was a law-abiding citizen. He just wasn't able to follow the law with that sticker plate placement is required. So we have legislation proposed. It has passed out of committee and it'll work through the process now that would make it a civil infraction with a fine of $150. Again, his intent was good. We understand why that placement is important. But in a case like this, I believe it's just an outdated law that needs to be updated.
Cooler heads did prevail, didn't they?
Eventually, but it cost him $3,000 of his own money. And I think he said four trips up north to deal with it.
That's insanity.
So we want people to be able to, we want our laws to align with that common sense piece. And,
yeah,
and there is another bill package that this will fit right into, which we are looking at. What laws on the books don't need to be misdemeanors? They're just civil infractions as such. And every so often, we just need to go back and look at some of those books.
That would fall into that category.
I would think so. I would think so. And on another positive note, I've mentioned before the bill that I introduced because of our friends in Jackson that are such strong advocates for those that are fighting opioid addictions. And as we know, it's the fentanyl that normally is killing our community and people of all ages and backgrounds. And we have been working diligently. We brought all the stakeholders. I have a bipartisan package in which we are asking, and it has passed the House. It is now heading over to the Senate, modify the sentencing structure for those that are dealing with fentanyl. So we're excited. We're excited to, again, have that bigger conversation of what modifications are needed in our legislation. Because back when it was written, I mean, the fentanyls and the other opioids based or fentanyl based derivatives were not even out there, and we need to make sure our law allows our prosecutors the ability to use some common sense judgment and give them that flexibility they need.
Elderly care facilities and COVID-19, a lot of concern, especially in the Detroit area.
Absolutely. And I must say, Greg, I am thoroughly impressed with so many of our long care facilities and senior facilities here in our Jackson community. I have spoken with a variety of people. For instance, this week I was speaking with individuals from the medical care facility, and they've had zero cases. And that is so impressive, because that means they're doing the right things and the safety and well-being of our loved ones, those that are being cared for by others. It's so important, but we're not seeing that in other parts of the state. And these are the parents, the grandparents, the brothers, the sisters in these care homes, specifically in southeastern Michigan, that the governor's executive order that she still has in place continue to put those positive patients in with those healthy seniors. And we are asking her to modify that. It's just the right thing to do. We need some common sense approaches. And when you look at the dollars spent, it's over $1 million a month in expenses for the two hubs that she created, and one in the southeastern area. And again, right now, when we look at the numbers of people that actually ended up over there, one of the facilities only had 39 patients, the other one had 10 patients, and that's costing Michigan taxpayers over $1 million per month per hub. And but yet they're not being utilized. We're sending those positive patients into senior care homes, and I think we could be doing a better job. Our seniors deserve more. And as someone who, just last night, I was speaking with someone who had a loved one in long care facility just recently, and their father passed, not of COVID, but of other, you know, health and age-related issues, and just the challenges this causes families not to be able to be with their loved one as they have their final days.
It's a nightmare.
It's heartbreaking. And the mental state, right? When we watch what happens to these seniors, I've been able to give two tributes lately, recognizing someone that turned 100, recognizing someone that turned 90, and celebrating their special birthdays. But obviously, I wasn't there with them. Their family wasn't there with them as they celebrated these special days. But we need to ensure the safety, the health, safety, and well-being of everyone. That's got to be our number one priority. But when you have situations where there are procedures and policies, protocols that could be put in place, I think we need to be cognizant of that as well.
What should we be doing?
I think a lot of they're doing the testing as you walk in, right? Some people have already had the antibody test, so they know they've already had it. They know they're not running a temp. You know, when I walk into my house office building every day, they ask me questions. Have you been exposed to certain people? Do you meet any of these criteria? They take my temperature, and I'm happy to volunteer to have that done, because I want to ensure that I'm safe, healthy, not just for my own health reasons, but because of the other individuals I'm around on a regular basis.
So July 1st, we get into the new no-fault bill.
Yes, absolutely. It's exciting, because people have been waiting a long time for two things. Relief on their auto insurance premium. But I see that people want a choice. They want to be able to make a decision that works for them, works for their budget, works for their level of risk taking, right? So, you know, I like to use the analogy of life insurance. You and I may have different life insurance policies. We may have no life insurance policy. That's a personal choice we make based on how risk adverse we are. So when it comes to car insurance, I'm excited this legislation that was passed, it was a year ago now, will now be coming into effect on July 1st, and it will give families the opportunity to choose what it's referred to as PIP, personal injury protection. It's the health insurance that's attached to your auto insurance claim. You will be able to choose what policy that fits your budget, fits you, and what based on what other health care coverage you have.
If people have questions, Julie, who can address those? Would it be your agent?
Absolutely. I think the first piece in walking through this process is go to your health insurance agent, right? So whoever covers your health care, ask them, what coverage would I have if I were in a car accident? What coverage does my regular health care policy cover? So understanding that first, and then you have to go to your auto insurance carrier and choose, become knowledgeable, educated as to what the options are. Again, if you like the unlimited, if that's the best fit for you because you want those extra assurances, you are able to keep that. You will, the law does have in place an automatic 10% rollback from what you're currently paying. So that estimates a savings of $100, $120 a year savings.
So at least you'll get a roll. You'll get the rollback.
That is a piece of the law, right? So that is a mandated piece. If you decide you want a $500,000 coverage plan, that is a 20% rollback at a savings of about $240 a year. Let's say you want to go with a $250,000 PIP coverage. That is a savings of approximately $420 a year. Let's say you want $50,000 a year coverage. That only is applicable to those that have Medicaid. And you are, under most circumstances, able to opt out. The only way you can opt out is if your employer or your personal health care or your retiree health care insurance is already covering you. And you have to prove that documentation. But that would be a 100% rollback of that PIP portion, which could be, again, up to $1,200 a year.
So it looks like Monday or next week, most everything will be reopened.
Yes, and you know, here's the good thing, Greg. I speak with a lot of people that don't feel comfortable. They don't feel safe. It's not the right thing for them to do to go out and about, and we have to completely respect that. We see the restaurants, we see the business owners putting all the proper protocol in place, but if someone's comfort level isn't there yet, they have to follow that comfort level and do what they need to do. But for those of us that do feel comfortable being out and about and around, it's an exciting time, and I am looking forward to giving back to the community. You know, we've had so many people step up in our community, so many of the restaurants giving to those frontline workers. And I was on a call with the wardens here in Jackson County prisons, and they were giving a shout out to the Brass Rail for the food that they brought in. And I know, where did the money come from to help the Brass Rail with those basic coverages? And I can tell you, I know, I personally stopped by the Brass Rail and made a donation, and then I got on the phone and I called three people I know that are true community givers, and they each and every one of them just instantly said, we're there for them. And so many people have stepped up during this challenging
time. A lot of incredible stories.
There are great stories. There are great stories. And as we navigate our way, please know that I am here to listen to your stories, that my office and I are working diligently on the emails coming through. I'm really struggling staying caught up with all of the emails, but we keep plugging away. And every time I carry my laptop with me, and every time I at least even have a few extra minutes, I tackle that and respond personally to the people reaching out to our office.
You must hate emails. I know.
It's not bad. I'm mastering the copy, the paste, and pretty much it's the same story. It's a different voice, but the same story. And I value hearing from everyone. You know, some of them are reaching out. I get a handful of emails that say, please allow our children to go back to school in the fall. It's so important that we get back to that piece. Then I'll get a handful of emails that say, don't cut any school funding. You can't do this. Kids are our priority. priority. And then I simply respond with the question, if we have over a $1 billion deficit in not only this year's school aid fund, but next year's, what suggestions might you offer? Help us solve this problem, right? Instead of just telling me what to do or what not to do, help me be a part of the conversation in which we find solutions.
What do you think for the fall?
I spoke with the appropriations chair yesterday. I spoke with two county superintendents, and we are very hopeful that it will not be as drastic as some are predicting. So we're waiting so many other factors at a federal level. What will those dollars look like? What restrictions will be put on those federal dollars? What additional dollars are coming in? But know that I'm fighting. We made that promise to our educators, to our school systems, to our superintendents, to our school boards that have to make those tough calls and decisions. They were told through the executive order. Our governor told them, do not lay off your staff.
Right.
Do not lay off those seasonal staff. Do not lay off any of your part-time staff. Keep them on board and keep paying them. We know two things. That's part of the budget. That expense in their budget, if that was reduced, that would be helping them now through these challenging times. We know those employees would have been receiving more money on unemployment with the $600 weekly stimulus. So the school districts were doing what they were told by the executive order, our governor, and that caused additional financial challenges on them. So now to go back and say, you did what the executive order told you to do, but now you're going to be financially penalized because of it, I have a hard time with that. They were doing what they were told. We may not like all of the executive orders. We may not agree with them. We may wish the governor would have partnered with us and allowed us as legislators to have a voice, because we were the people out here listening to the constituents that were calling us day in and day out. But this is where we're at today, and we need to make sure that we make the right decisions. And they're not going to be easy decisions, but I will continue to gather information so that they're informed decisions.
Do you see in September a couple hundred kids running through the front door of a school?
Yes, I'm very hopeful. Very hopeful. And again, it goes back to the comment I made a little bit ago. Not all parents may feel comfortable or with the safety and well-being of their children. They may still have those health concerns for whatever reasons. We need to acknowledge that that parent has to do what they feel is right for their child. My concern is when children go back to school, like after that first month, when we've already had the first count day, there is very, very minimum revenue to the school district if the child is entered into school after that count day. So I am asking as a legislator that we relook at what count day looks like. We relook at, right now we know 75% of the students need to be in that building for that to count as an actual school day. We need to be looking differently at that, because now we have online learning, we have distant learning, we have a flip learning. So we're there's just so many new and innovative ways that we don't want to punish the school with an outdated formula in funding them that penalizes good education.
State Rep Julie Alexander. Julie, we have a nice weekend for your golf game.
I don't golf, but I will definitely be outside mowing, doing yard work. I love to grab my laptop and just sit in the backyard. And
oh, wow.
I've got Wi-Fi in the backyard most of the time.
You're giving me a headache.
And it's wonderful.
Thanks, Julie.
Thank you, Greg.